Welcome to our hearing on Senate Bill 260. We are just working on a recap of the bill. We also have a different approach to the equalization funding formula. So what I'll do is allow Steve to walk us through the latest iteration of his outline for considering what's in the bill, and that will jog the memory of the committee about what we started out to do with the report on ESDs that came from the last legislative session, and the closures that we were able to accomplish with Senate Bill 259 as well as Senate Bill 260. So let's begin with the outline that you've distributed to the committee members, Steve.
Mr. Chair, members, you have before you the ESD equalization issues. What I've tried to do here is to lay out some of the policy decisions that you'll be dealing with, both that are in Senate Bill 260 and a couple of others that perhaps isn't in the bill right now. The first question deals with how you want to define equalization. Is it going to be in terms of dollars, or is it going to be in terms of services, or some combination or another approach? And the dollars might be on a per district floor type setup, or dollar amounts per student. And then if it is the dollar amount, are there any minimums or maximums for those dollars per district or per student? Second item relating to K-12, is it going to be independent of the K-12 formula and that equalization process, or will it be linked somehow to that process as currently in Senate Bill 260 in terms of what the task force recommended? 260 has in it that you use the K-12 equalization formula for both school districts and ESDs, and then the ESDs have a share of the dollars allocated by that formula to the component districts of the ESD. So that's an important aspect of what you decide. The third item is the implementation path. Is it a long-term path or a short-term path in terms of this dealing? Is the plan different for the short-term than it is from the long-term? Is equalization in the short-term, is that conceptually different than what you would want it to be in the long-term after several years? And then the legislation, again, does that only deal with the next biennium, or does it try to deal with the whole process to get to whatever you consider long-term equalization to be? The resolution process is in Senate Bill 260 in terms of how much of the formula revenue that the ESDs receive has to be subject to the resolution process, where two-thirds of the districts with a majority of the students approve the expenditures or the uses of those revenue. The voluntary merger one, I put that in there only because, not because the bill deals with mergers, but because there may be a merger or two among ESDs, and you might want to consider how the merger of those ESDs would affect any funding averages for that particular merged ESD, and what that might do to any distribution that you agree on, how that would play into any mergers. The next item is sharing revenue with component districts. This only deals with grant and Wallowa ESDs that levy property taxes and use their state school funds and property taxes to share with their component school districts. Should that policy be continued or discontinued? In Senate Bill 260, it's discontinued because you're using the same equalization formula for both K-12 and ESD. Part of that discussion might include what the ESD and district tax rates are for those as well, because they're different from the regular ESD and K-12. The next item is the formula revenue less local revenue. What happens if towards the end of the equalization process, you have equalized at a level where the local property taxes for the ESD are more than what the formula would allocate to them? What would happen to that excess local property tax revenue at that point? Finally, balance to funds available. This is just to remind us that whatever the process is that is adopted, there has to be some kind of balancing process to make the distributions equal to funds available. And finally, if there's any administration issues that the decisions raise, to deal with those in the bill as well.
Well,
Well, let's, thank you, Steve. Let's begin with the question of equalization, and we'll talk about that in terms of service equity and ADMW. Colleagues, if you remember, we spent an awful lot of time working on the whole question of whether or not you could get to equity funding for ESDs just on an ADMW basis. And I think it was clear after we listened to a lot of testimony from people that that services provided by each school district and each ESD exist in a slightly different configuration. Some have long distances, others have availability of services, some have real challenge in providing the same level or type of services in a very small base of students. So each one of these ESDs provides a slightly different product. Each one of them exists in a, definitely exists in a different milieu. The community has a different configuration of assets available to it. Some of the services come through the district, some of the services come only through the ESD. So the question of equalization by dollars was played off against the question of equalization by services. And I think what we need to do is try to remember that we have already sort of challenged the group that went out of the building in the last legislative session that came back with recommendations and revisions for this committee to look at the service equity issue over the interim. So I guess I'll ask the committee to help me remember the charge that we gave for Mr. Campbell, and that was to look at the services that are available through all ESDs in the state of Oregon, the services that are available from the school districts, help us come to common definitions of all those services, and then bring back some information on what configuration those exist in. That was a charge that we, I think, should consider in this process. But what we really, I think, need to do is talk about Steve's last run. I hate to bring the runs back to the table, but when we met yesterday, we were discussing the idea of coming to equity using a formula that redistributes some of the dollars through the ESD funding formula. And Steve, maybe you could explain to the committee how you achieve the median, what you used for a definition there, and then what it was that you did below that line and what it was that you did above the line to address equity funding. You have to, if you have to, you have to. Have another run here.
No, no, not a run.
Not a run.
Not a run. No panic.
Okay.
It's just more of a walk.
It's a walk. Yes, thank you, Senator Drake.
There was some discussion at the last meeting in terms of how I came up with some of the minimum dollar amounts, and I think this will help understand that process.
Matrix, to explain the matrix.
Yes. What this does is to lay out, starting with the 1999 legislation, what the minimum amounts were in that legislation for the nine ESDs below the state average at that time. So you can see that Northwest ESD was at $150 per weighted student, various amounts. The Deschutes was at 125, the lowest amount, and Lynn Benton Lincoln the highest at Jackson with 225. So that's what was in the statute as the starting point. You can see in the next column there for 2000-2001, the estimates that the actual numbers are going to be slightly less than the statutory numbers. That's for two reasons, I think. One, the funds were just slightly less than estimated, and the weighted student count was a little higher than estimated for the 99 session. But that's about where we think the numbers will come in now on a dollars per weight for extended ADMW. Then the question is, what do you build off of, and how do you build off those minimums if you want to take this kind of approach? And option one, I said, let's start with the lowest Deschutes and raise it up the highest percentage. So try to speed up bringing up the lowest ones. So I increased the $125 by 30% to get the 160. I followed a similar procedure for the others, and then for the, let's see, Lynn Benton Lincoln, I guess, went from 200 to 210 for the lowest percentage increase. So the percentages between the high and the low were, all of them are kind of arbitrary. But the point was to bring the lowest up the most, or the close, the fastest towards the state average, and still stay within the total funds available, and keep the ones above the average harmless on a per-weighted student basis. And then you can see that I've carried that forward to 2002-2003. Those numbers there would about be within the dollars available at this time. Might need some, a little bit of adjustment yet, but would be close.
And Steve, that was sort of based on the discussion that we had heard in committee from Multnomah ESD and a couple of others at the high end of funding that said, just leave us alone. Don't take anything away from us. If you have to do equalization, if you could freeze fund those at the high end and then use the savings from freeze funding those fund those at the low end, that was, at least in that discussion that we had with the folks from Multnomah ESD, was something they thought they could live with.
Yes, this was tries to fit into that approach.
Okay, and this approach is a little bit different because what it does is it it doesn't freeze fund anybody, but it it does use a series of averages above and below the line. And the recapture of revenue happens above the line and the redistribution happens mostly below the line.
Yes, and you also have the additional dollars from the funding expected to be higher than what it was for the last year or the last biennium. So it's those new dollars or the dollars above the prior funding levels that was channeled to the DSDs below the average.
Okay. And 30% was the largest movement, and that was in Deschutes ESD.
Yes.
And, Mr. Vice Chair has a question.
Again, explain to me the ones that aren't shown on the second matrix. Those are people that would be held harmless or what?
Yes, those that you have nothing there would be held at the same $10 amount per weighted student. I didn't put those on there to make it clear which ones were below the average and statutorily dealt with last session.
Okay.
So when you're saying that held harmless at the student weighted, the students had reduced, their total funding would reduce.
Yes, correct.
It's
not a total dollar hold.
Well, good question, Mr. Chair.
Question.
It's an adequacy question. I still look at Little Lake ESD and wonder if...
Which one is
it? Lake.
Thank you.
It only has $500,000. I don't see how they run an ESD on that small of an amount of money. It seems like, and I guess Jefferson's in a similar position. Is there some minimum number that we should be looking at? We've talked in the past of at least $1 million.
Well, I think that is a question that was brought forth by the recommendations from the task force, and that was to establish a minimum amount of funding for the ESD to operate on. And I think that's an excellent question. Steve, we did talk about a minimum amount of funding. What was the mechanism for getting that adjustment incorporated?
Well, there's the question of, one, do you do it immediately all in 1 year, or do you phase up to whatever that minimum amount is for a district?
Well, in the case of Lake, it's going down. In dollar amount, I guess that's education students, two people.
The related question is how fast could they ramp up services to use those funds, and if you took them there immediately, or would you want to phase that in over a period of time and set the long-term goal to be a minimum amount for districts?
Actually,
we have some people from Lake here, and this would be invited testimony.
From Lake?
Lake County? Would you like to come forward? We're about to ask you a really silly question. If we gave you a lot of money, could you use it up? Good morning.
Good morning.
The Vice Chair has a question, and I think it relates to ramping up the Well, first of all, it relates to the critical mass for keeping ESD fully functional. And right now, the ESD funding for Lake is about $560,000.
78.
578.
578.
So, Jonathan, I guess the question is, and you've been talking with the legislature about this for a long time, become almost the incumbent rural expert for us. In fact, as I recall, back about 93, you said that your PhD was on rural schools.
That's correct.
We refer to these folks as unindicted co-conspirators.
That's probably a title we justly deserve.
The questions that I have are sort of directed at, if we were looking at sort of a minimum level and trying to move people up, what's reasonable, what's that? And I think the second part of that question is, if we were, I don't know where we got, but you've been talking at different times about at least $1 million to run one, you're a little, maybe 40% under that now. What does it take? You know, could you even use the money effectively if the legislature were to say that we need to get to $1 million this next year? How does that really? Yeah, how do you react to that?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chair, my judgment would be that as I've listened to this committee deliberate, both by internet and when I've been here, is that when you talk about a core body of services and a basic level of array of services across the board, and when you talk about the issues of delivering services in sparsely populated regions, I have all along identified that $1.8 million is probably where you would at to get the kind of package I've heard you describe and talk about with each other. The $1 million figure was one that was generated by the OAESD group. I was part of that group. I voted for that figure. I think it is a decent stopgap measure or stopgap standard for a minimum level of service that could be done. And I still support that as under those conditions as the stopgap basic for a small operation such as ours, despite our 8,000 square miles. I think that's a good figure. We already have in place, we have a budget, which may of course be fiction, but we do have in place a budget, and we have been already debating about both Senate Bill 260 and Senate Bill 259 promised to change the way we do business. So we already have in place a pretty thorough planning process. We've already got a consultant we've identified that we want to work with. If in fact we were to be budgeted a significantly greater amount of money, the commitment from the ESD board already and from the ESD superintendent and with some cooperation from districts is that any money that we couldn't put to work July 1 would be banked with the notion that this would serve as a reserve for startup costs or expenses that might be associated with any services that could expand it. Our intention is we have an elaborate planning process in place. We would be instituting new resolutions, or we would be adopting new resolutions in January of 2002. So this would be service, anything we get beyond what we need to maintain status quo would be used as a startup reserve for what would come after that.
So in answer to the question, there wouldn't be any real problem in distributing those dollars.
No grass under their feet.
Yeah, and I guess the other issue, you mentioned Jefferson is the other...
Jefferson's the other one.
...community that has a critical mass less than $1 million. They're at 686 in relative terms. The revenue, the distribution would bring Jefferson up to 800,000 roughly, but Lake gets flat funded at 578 due to the loss of students under the run that we have in consideration now. And I think there was a real notion in the committee, correct if I'm wrong here, that there has to be critical mass or there has to be enough resource to keep those series of functions operating. So, Steve, had we not decided that there was some adjustment at the lower end for the five smallest ESDs, or at least these two certainly seem to be notable because they're so much below $1 million.
That can be incorporated.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Please. I may speak to that point.
Yes.
One of the concerns we've had and one of the issues in the current biennium is the fact that when that baseline or that hold harmless figure is driven by ADMW, we are, part of our economic condition is we're in an area of dwindling enrollment. So if it's held harmless by dollars per student, we still lose money.
Right.
That there's a difference between that and being held in actual dollars.
I think that's been well recognized by the committee that if you're in that declining enrollment and the equalization question is driven by ADMW, you never get there.
Yeah.
Thank you. Other questions?
None. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. So I think the approach needs to deal with at least those two at the lowest end.
And that would be an immediate change.
Yes, I think that needs to be an immediate change.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vice Chair.
If we were to go there, it strikes me, and it's sort of getting at the equity issue a little bit, we may want to look at defining a minimum level of service at $1 million and then go ADMW above that. So we're treating all of them equally. And logically, to Steve's point of how quick could you do that, if we were going to do that, it would make some sense to me to phase that in, just jumping to that over 2 years. Rather than just one, it would be pretty hard to double in size. Even though the good superintendent has expressed the willingness to spend any money we want to give him, there's some logic to that.
Well, there is some logic to that. I think the other thing is an unfortunate coefficient is that if we make an adjustment based on size and critical mass, then those dollars have to come from some other place. I guess, you know, when we talk to the folks at the higher end of the per capita funding issues, their comment was that they could get along on existing funding streams. And we talked about a flat funding or a freeze funding. And, in fact, what was the approach that was taken in the last legislative session with regard to the freeze funding, some of the ESD?
The first year was different from the second year, as I recall. I believe this second year had both the higher of what of the dollar amount per weighted student or total dollars. I think that was in the second year. It might have been in the first, but it was a hold harmless on whichever of the two was the highest for the district.
And how much money are we redistributing under this?
Yeah, what's the total of the redistribution? If you look at all the
It depends on what you consider the starting point for the redistribution.
Just under this run, it should be.
Well, yeah. The difference is between the 2 years is about $9 million in the revenue difference column in 0102. I'm not sure if that.
I see.
How you're defining redistribution, though.
Well, if I understand, Steve, what you said is that you would, were, in essence, holding harmless the districts at their ADMW rate.
Yes.
At their prior year's ADMW rate. And then whatever growth in total funding, and apparently that's $9 million, $8, $9,
yes.
Something. And then that would be distributed based on the adjustment formula that you put here. So
correct.
The redistribution is from the prior formula is $9 million.
Yes.
And that would change that a little bit if you tried to get to $1 million of flat, obviously.
It would change from that. It would also change if you went to a hold harmless on total dollar amounts equal to the prior year. So there wouldn't be any negatives in the revenue difference column.
So all of the districts would be sort of flat funded on the ADMW from the last year. And then the $9 million would be adjusted into the formula to bring those below the median up. And all right, so far. Yes.
Yes.
And that the, and how are we treating those above the median?
The run keeps the dollars per student constant.
Right.
Another option would be to keep the, for those who lose, are losing students, would be to keep the total dollar amount from the prior year constant.
Well, I guess the loss of students is certainly an issue that ESDs are having difficulty with, like all districts are, but the rapidly increasing districts also have a different set of problems. Of course, we're back on the same equation that we were in earlier. But I guess I'm really concerned about looking at the $9 million distribution and trying to solve some equity issues where we're, I think, most likely to get the legal challenges based on equity of services.
Mr. Chair, I don't think you're going to, if you come up with a formula that migrates, I think based on the way we move the school funding formula in general over the years and the court's reaction to that, that legal challenges are probably not a big issue, as long as we have a change that's moving in a direction. The question is that enough movement to satisfy the issues that we've talked about. $9 million shift out of 600 or more than that, much money as we're talking about, is not a very much of a shift. And it's reality. And as long as we're going to hold people harmless, you're not going to get much. But it might be a movement in the right direction, considering the point that you had made the other day, Senator Menace's concern of taking a look at the competitive model, I guess we'd call it, Senator Menace.
I've given up on the proposal.
You've given it up? I thought that was part of the...
Just vote no.
Just vote no. There's really nowhere to go. You either add money or you decide that $9 million is the only shift you're going to get.
Well, at this point, I think adding money is probably not an option. I think what we need to do is look at the equalization issue that we have and the resources that are within the formula. And I'm still of the opinion that the recommendation came so clearly to do something at the lower level of funding, to step toward equity, that's a step that we really need to take. When you were referring to the relation to K-12, Steve, if we make an adjustment of the kind that you've discussed, what are the considerations that we need to think about on the relationship to K-12 and whether that's independent of the funding models in K-12 or linked?
This approach is independent of the K-12 formula entirely. It's also independent in the sense that you need to separate the state school fund between how much the K-12 school districts get and how much the ESDs get of that total. And these numbers are based upon how the state school fund was split between K-12 and ESDs in the governor's budget.
All right. So this, it exists in an independent way. It really isn't linked in the sense of the K-12. This equalization really is on ESD services only. Okay. When you raise the question of linkage, explain why that is a consideration for the committee or why it might be.
Because it's in Senate Bill 260 in terms of that approach to use the equalization formula for both K-12 and ESD dollars, put them all through the formula, distribute that to the school districts, and then take a percent of the school district total and give that to the ESD.
That was the 5%
yes, approach.
Okay. And so the clear path is whether we have the accept the recommendation of the task force as being the 5% of the total.
That would be a linked approach.
Right. Or whether we look at this approach, which essentially takes maybe a faster step toward equity, but looks at a median approach above and below that line. And short-term, long-term implementation path, we're really only talking about this biennium versus setting up an equalization program that lasts over a much longer period of time.
Right. This approach basically is saying, look at the next biennium, have legislation that deals with that, and then do you go beyond that or not in terms of setting up a continuing formula or process to get to some final version of ESD equalization?
Well, and then the, I think that speaks to the issue of requesting the ESD task force to stay in function and look at the ESD services equity issue. But in terms of equalization, I think this biennium is probably what we better look at. It's another legislature making come back with an entirely different funding stream issue and revenue picture. I think we probably will.
Yeah, well, part of my reason for putting that there, on the K-12 side, you always had a fallback equalization formula if the legislature didn't, future legislators didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's that fallback. Here, if there is no fallback formula for ESDs in place, if there's no legislation, no future legislation. So it's a matter of whether, if that's the approach, desirable approach to take.
Okay. Well, I think that was the whole, one of the purposes of the task force was impaneled. When you talk about 2001-03 for phase-in versus all phase-in years, what's the choice there?
The choice would be to set up some kind of process to carry it out for years or two or three bienniums in terms of how you want this phase-in to continue, or again, leave it up to the next legislature.
So those would be, in general terms, those would be steps toward equalization?
Yes.
Assuming we're on a process that'll take maybe two or three biennium.
It depends on how far you want to take the glide path.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
The relatedness of the K-12 and the ESD and how that works. I'd like to have someone from the Northwest ESD come and explain how the schools within the Northwest ESD are looking at this relatedness of ESD funding and the K-12 funding.
Okay. And do we have people here from the Northwest ESD? We do. Just come forward. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Todd Herbert, Superintendent for the Northwest Regional ESD, and I'd be happy to answer any questions I can this morning. Obviously, we're very interested in the continuing discussions regarding the equity plan. We have proceeded with our budget development locally in our 20 school districts using the numbers presented through the four-year equity plan. First observation I would make is that each of our districts are already in the position of having to reduce programs and services, and any further reduction in the ESD equity plan would necessitate further reductions. If this committee is charting a course that would be anything different from the four-year equity plan proposed by the various groups that have worked on this topic, I would ask that each of our districts have the opportunity to come and talk specifically about how that adjustment would adversely affect their programs and services in the next school year. The situation that we have in Northwest Regional ESD is that we have a service credit model whereby districts are using the credits allocated through the ESD funding formula to pay for services that other school districts receive at no cost because of their higher funding levels. So any further delay or reduction in ESD funding is strictly a transfer of dollars out of the other operating budgets within the school district to pay for services that other school districts enjoy at no cost in richer funded ESDs.
Senator Mears?
If we do that, we'll make sure we've got hankies for everybody to cry on.
Senator Starr, did that get at your question?
It gets at my question. That's why I've got heartburn over this.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Just looking at the revenue impact, and we show coming out of the governor's recommended ESD, 157.9, and then for the next half, 0203, 165.7. How does that compare with the biennium we're in right now that we're going to end in July? Do we have those numbers?
Senator, you're quoting from a document that's the...
Right, it's on the Senate Bill 260, and it's Legislative Review Office and Revenue Impact Proposed Legislation. Down at the bottom, it says Revenue Impact, and it talks about the governor's ESD funding. And what I was curious about is how this compares with the biennium we're in right now.
The current biennium was around $150 million, I believe, about each year.
Okay. Yeah, so it's not a big increase, is it? I think the note down here was 4.5%.
Right, under, in Senate Bill 260.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of total dollars, both state and local dollars, what the split would be between K-12 and ESDs, the 95.5.
Mm-hmm. But overall enrollment affected is about what kind of increase?
I don't have a percentage.
That's right. We're just trying to get a grasp on the numbers to see where we are.
Basically, what percentage growth in this biennium compared to last biennium?
And versus the total number of students that ESDs may deal with?
Well, the total number of students would be same as for K-12.
Yeah.
Weighted students, I think that's roughly 0.8% a year. Okay.
Yeah, got it. Your question, Senator.
Mm-hmm.
So in relative terms, the increase is not that great.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, do you need
question?
Any further testimony?
I think Senator Starr, you got to your issue.
Thank you.
Okay, and if I could, Senator Starr, one last comment, because I'm confused by Senator Minnis's comment. I'm not sure if everyone understands, again, the disparity that exists between the educational service district. If I could use a specific example. The school districts in Multnomah ESD were concerned that they might lose outdoor school that was fully funded by the Multnomah ESD because of their funding level. It's more than twice the level of our funding. Our districts pay for outdoor school through fundraisers at the school level with PTAs, et cetera. The issue for us is that there is a disparate level in funding to provide basic special education services. And I would challenge the senator from Multnomah to see if he knows the difference that currently exists in the funding support that the Multnomah ESD can provide for each of its school districts in special education versus the limitations that we have in providing that basic support in special education to the districts in Northwest ESD.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Minnis.
Sir, I suggest that you talk to the senator from Astoria about the services provided by your district to her area, because honestly, she said give no additional money to the Northwest School District because she feels that you people do not provide an adequate level service to people in the rural or more rural areas of your area. So when I've got Democratic members of the Senate telling me not to give you one thin dime more than what you currently have, it's hard for me to feel sorry for you.
Well, based on that comment in the public, I think we ought to have the superintendents from Clatsop County here to talk with this committee.
Actually, I think the discussion that needs to occur, maybe more profitably done over time in comparison services that are available statewide. Because I think Senator Minnis is trying to get at something that I think is really important that's somewhat eluded the committee's consideration during this 14-week period that we've been working on this and other bills, and that is that if services are available in a community, readily available, they're available usually at less expense. And if they're not available, they have to be provided by somebody. And there's no real way for us to compare services that are delivered within the report or in a very easy way, just looking at the paper stream that we've been able to generate from the ESDs. And that's an issue that we kept coming back to, the idea that service equity is not really out there. Senator Minnis has been trying to get some kind of a market driver into this process from the first day. So I think there's a lack of a mechanism to make a market driver. I have no doubt that in many areas the ESD is the best possible mechanism to provide those services. But when you look at the dollars in some of the districts like Multnomah that seem to be huge, there's always a smaller nearby district that doesn't compare well. And the farther out you go from the system, the worse the comparisons look. And I think I've heard the same comment that the good senator from Multnomah has heard from the senator from Svenson, about those same kinds of economies of scale. I don't think we're going to get to equity until all of us can say the same suite of services is available to the kids in our communities, either from the school district or the ESD. And so that's why I think we're struggling with the linkage issue. We're struggling with the ADMW and per capita question. And that's why we're looking at an equity question. I think add to that that, and I won't speak for Senator Muniz, but I think his real question is whether ESDs are required at all in this process. I'll defer to you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just, you know, I've made my statement here a number of different times, but I think you, sir, and others who hold the same opinion have one issue that you might want to face, and that's whether or not you can get 16 votes on the Senate floor, whatever your proposal is. So, frankly, if you want to take me on that issue, you can do that.
Well, I was encouraged but concerned, too, about the discussion regarding basic services in Lake ESD. If we could use a similar situation to examine, let's look at the Tillamook County school districts that we serve through Northwest Regional. And we have a similar student population. Similarly, we have a set of small school districts scattered across a large geographic area, yet we currently work to serve those districts funded at $147 per student. You're proposing $175. Yet in the same breath, you look at Lake ESD, currently funded, I believe, in excess of $300, and you're looking at nearly doubling that. We have exactly the same challenges they have in serving small, remote school districts over a large geographic area. If there is a concern about adequate service delivery in the Northwest Regional ESD, it's because we are funded so much lower than other school districts that we don't have the resources to provide the kinds of services that other ESDs enjoy. So I think any analysis of basic service level has to take into consideration that there are a number of us throughout this state that serve small, rural school districts. Thank you very much.
Further questions? Thank you. Well, the other approach that we discussed in dealing with ESDs is to look at the per capita, the ADMW. And Northwest does have one of the lower per capita fundings for ADMW at 147. It's equal to the amount of Jefferson. But then you've got Willamette ESD at 148, Deschutes at 123, and actually they're just all over the board. The ones that stick out are Wallowa and North Central on this one at the other end of the spectrum. Colleagues, we do have to deal with those basic service questions and the critical mass, and so I appreciate the question, Senator Starr. Steve, you talked about a resolution process on a percent of formula revenue or all formula revenue. What were you trying to get the committee's attention at on that issue?
In Senate Bill 260, there is provisions in there that 90% of the formula dollars would have to be allocated by the resolution process. And so it's a matter of keeping that as part of whatever amendments you may want, or whether you would want to adjust that 90% up or down.
Okay, and that's, again, that's the linkage issue, the 90% versus all formula revenue. Under an all formula revenue scenario, how does that work?
But that would just be 100% of the formula dollars being subject to the resolution process.
Okay. How would voluntary mergers affect this? Because we probably have two ESDs that will merge voluntarily.
There's the Willamette Yamhill possibility, and I can't recall offhand what the other one is. I have not looked at those, but if the point of interest is that if that kind of merger takes place, then the average for that ESD will change. And so it's what to be aware of that, how that would affect the distribution if the district average changed and it was
one of those below the state average, so that the gap to the state average would change from that merger process. It might do nothing, and it might cause a little bit of redistribution.
Okay, and Senate Bill 259 was the bill that actually authorizes voluntary mergers.
Correct.
Did we get with that package, and Senate Bill 259 is heard in Senator Starr's committee, that passed off before yesterday, I believe. Did we connect with the staff people over at education and talk about the impacts of a potential merger? And is that something maybe we should bring before the committee before we move this bill in work session next week?
I did not talk to the education staff about how that might have affected the distribution, one, not knowing what the distribution process would be at that time.
Well, I think that's going to be something that we should look at, because I'm almost certain that those two districts, at least Willamette and Yamhill, will in fact merge. So I think that is something that we need to bring perhaps a couple of scenarios to the committee to show what we need to do within SB 260 to make it work. Recap, if you will, Steve, the revenue sharing agreement between Grant and Wallowa County. And let's discuss what would happen under a couple of different scenarios there.
Yeah, Grant and Wallowa County, or Grant and Wallowa ESDs, share roughly 80% of their local revenue, property tax revenue primarily, and state school fund revenue with their component school districts. Right now, that shared revenue is counted as local revenue for those districts in the K-12 equalization formula. So there's a transfer of funds from the ESD to the K-12. It's counted on the K-12 side for the formula. The Senate Bill 260 proposes doing away with that process. It really didn't matter with 260 to continue it, because you were dealing with one formula for both K-12 and ESD. Mm-hmm. If you go this route you're talking about in keeping the K-12 separate from ESDs, then I don't know that it makes as much sense to do away with it, but you still could. If you do away with it, then it's a matter of how do you count those dollars that were shared with the Pomona school districts. One approach would be to shift about $3.8 million of state school fund dollars from ESD's K-12 to make up what is no longer K-12 local revenue in those two ESDs. Or you could leave the process in place as it is now. What you have for Grant and Wallowa ESDs is a tax rate of, $3.50 to $4, and the component school districts have tax rates of about $1 to $2. And that is just the reverse of the normal rates, where the K-12 district has about a $4 to $5 rate, and the ESD has a $1 to $2 rate. And so the ESDs, if they got to include all of that shared money for themselves, that wouldn't change the tax rates. This process, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm. But the question is, what is designated as local revenue? What becomes offset at the K-12 right. budget level?
And whether you do any shift of state school fund dollars to compensate for shared ESD shared dollars.
And one obvious anomaly is that's why the distribution formula looks so skewed when you look at Grant and Wallowa ESD.
Right. Grant and Wallowa ESDs, if you took out the shared revenue with the component districts, the dollar amounts per weighted student would be roughly $450 to $500 in that range, and not $2,000. And also at the same time, if those two ESDs had any reduction in revenue, as this shows on a per student basis, that would be shared in a reduction in the revenue going to their component school districts, I would assume.
there's a statute that says a certain percent of those ESD funds have to be shared with the component districts. So any reduction would affect the component districts as well.
So the question is whether to cure the anomaly. But curing the anomaly is on paper at this end of the equation because you're not going to change the tax rate.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And that's, I think, what you're getting at when you talk about the formula revenue less than local revenue, or what to exclude and what to include in that formula.
Right. At some point, depending on where equalization ends up, there would be a possibility of local revenue being more than what the firm is, says that district should have. And if so, then what do you do with the excess property taxes? How do you count them? One option would be to take any excess property taxes and, again, count them as local revenue on the K-12 component district side, even though the dollars stayed with ESD.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Senator George?
Wouldn't that have a perverse effect upon the fact that the local folks had voted to support their local school and their local ESD, and then we would come along and say, gee, since you were so generous, we're going to back out the formula at the state level? I mean, wouldn't that be the effect?
Well, I think the question, Senator George, is when we're trying to figure out equalization issues.
Right.
And we're using an ADMW basis formula. If ESD is giving 80% of its funds to K-12, and that's counted as local revenue, mm-hmm. it has an effect of displacing dollars that come in from the general fund to the community. It also has the effect of skewing the numbers, at least on these runs, to almost double what they ought to be. And I don't know whether we just adjust these things as we look at them on the runs and try to make equity based on what really goes to the ESD.
I can do it either way on the runs. I just want to be consistent whichever way that is.
Right. Okay. So, no, I guess, Senator George, to your question, I don't think that overturns what the local folks are doing with their tax base. But in terms of equalization, I think we need to either make the argument for retaining that formula and just with lots of footnotes,
mm-hmm.
or else backing the dollars out to show what's actually happening at the ESD. Because I know a lot of folks during the discussion of ESD funding would hold up these two districts mm-hmm. and say, well, look at the high-funded districts.
It wasn't in ESD.
And a lot of that money is displacement. So. And then the last question, I think, was two, do we work with the total funding available, which is about $9 million for the biennium?
This is trying to get at, and it's in Senate Bill 260, I believe, that if you have certain amounts per student, and you're dealing with estimates in terms of number of students, at least, and what those dollars per student will be for those above the average, you need some way to eventually make what the statute says they should have match what funds are available. And the approach that has been taken the last biennium was to say, all right, if the dollar amounts per student and the minimums and such add up to $150 million, but there's only $145 million available, then you take a percentage reduction and apply it to each ESD's total dollar amount. So that even though you say you guarantee so much per student or total dollars for that district, it might be 99% of it or it might be 102% of it if there's more funds available than estimated. So it could be on either way, up or down, but it would apply to all ESDs equally, or the same percent would apply to all ESDs.
So the question is, how do you rebalance?
And that's the process that envisioned in 260.
And what is the all districts versus some districts?
Well, in 260, the approach I talked about dealt with all districts. You could say that if there was a shortfall, that it had to come out of all of those that were above the state average, for example. Mm-hmm. Or if there was more money than estimated, that it would all go to those below the average, for example. So you could
okay.
treat different districts differently depending on whether it was above or below the estimate, the actual amount.
Well, I think a lot of these issues that you presented this morning end up as toggle switches in this process, and we're going to have to ask the committee to come through these things, make some decisions, and as a result of the decisions, we're going to have effects on the runs. I think what we need to do is perhaps go back through this list clarify what questions are going to be asked of the committee and show some of the effects. Obviously, we're not going to be doing that today, but when we come back into public hearing on the CSD equalization issue, what I will want to do is recap again the committee recommendations that came forward from the ESD report, talk about the final report that was delivered with some modifications from Dr. Campbell and the group that made the last presentation to the ESD, make the decisions that we need to make about equalization at both ends of the spectrum, at the high end and the low end, and whether or not the committee wants to use the a percentage formula that we discussed today, and what do we do with the lowest the funding, or what do we do for a flooring funding? I think that's the other question that we need to come to. Then deal with the length of the phase-in and the length of the implementation, and then provide instructions in that legislation for the resolution process. I think the issue of voluntary mergers is one that maybe does not rise to the level of something that we have to do in this legislative process. And then it's a simple matter of deciding whether or not we want to change the existing formula for our purposes with Grant and Wallow or leave it alone and just heavily footnote all of the adjustments that are made. And then at that point, decide what are the total dollars available and where they go and make another run. So I guess those are the instructions that I would give committee staff to work through for the next presentation of this Senate Bill 260. And we are scheduled again to come back to 260 on Thursday. Now, Senator Dredge, do you have any questions about the approach? Senator Minnis, no questions about the approach. And Senator Stark. Okay. Well, if that's what we need to do, I think we need to get that behind us, and that's what I'll ask the committee to do on Thursday. There is no other business scheduled for our committee today. I'm hearing and seeing no other agenda items, and we will be in adjournment until Wednesday.